Welcome to the Be Yourself Happy, Healthy, Hopeful podcast. I'm your host, Adriana Grande. I'm a health promoter at the Bulimia Anorexia Nervosa Association, also known as BANA, here in Windsor, Essex. I'm thrilled to be here with you as we begin our journey of meaningful conversations about mental health, self-acceptance, and the path to wellness. Today, I'm joined by Giselle Vinsky. Giselle Vinsky is a social worker and team lead with the Amani program at the Windsor Essex Community Health Center with over 12 years of experience to her credit. For the first 5 years of her career, she trained and worked in Texas at the North Texas State Hospital, an inpatient psychiatric hospital, and a long-term care home, respectively. Giselle later moved back to her home country and worked as a counselor with the government of Grenada, where she created a bereavement support group for moms who lost their babies in childbirth and early infancy. Giselle also worked with the island's child psychiatrist, serving children and adolescents with mental health issues. Giselle moved to Canada and worked as a social worker at a rehab hospital for seniors in Toronto before moving to Windsor in her current role. Giselle holds an associate's degree in social sciences with a concentration in law, history, and sociology from the T.A. Mary Show Community College in Grenada, an undergraduate degree in social work from the Midwestern State University in Texas, a master's degree in social work from the University of Texas in Arlington with a concentration in mental health and substance abuse, and a diploma in gerontology. Giselle recently received an award from the University of Windsor for 2026 Outstanding Field Instructor MSW program. Giselle was a recipient of the Hesselbein Global Leadership Academy at the University of Pittsburgh. She lives by the philosophy created by the late Francis Hesselbein, to serve is to live. She does this through her words and engagements with others, not just in her career, but in her personal life. In her spare time, Giselle enjoys volleyball, reading, and exercising. She has been a co-coach for 6 years, coaching girls volleyball, both recreationally and competitively. And just a clap for that bio. Welcome, Giselle.
Thank you for having me. This is exciting.
What a journey you've had. We were saying offline before I pressed record. I was like, I love this bio. You have done so much. And we're so lucky to have you here in Windsor. So thank you for coming today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so before I get into your role with the ECHC or the Windsor Essex Community Health Center, can you share a bit about what drew you to working in social work? Was there maybe a personal moment or experience that lit the path for you?
Yeah, so when you read my bio, I actually had like a little moment of going back in time.
Yeah.
My path to social work was not straightforward at all. Like, I started with law, history, and sociology. My goal was to become a lawyer, focused on family law. And I had already graduated and it was time to get into law school. And then I spent some time with my aunt in North Carolina, who was actually a social work professor. And I would chat with her and I was like, okay, well, I want to do family law. I want to focus on this. I want to focus on that. And she's like, sounds to me like you want to join my profession. I was like, no, I don't. But I think just like having those conversations with her and even sitting in on one of her lectures, I really decided, I was like, okay, this is probably the path. It really just showed me like, one, how broad the field of social work was. But something about the direct impact that you can make as a social worker was definitely something that I was excited about. And I think that was the pivotal moment where things changed for me. And then I decided, okay, social work is definitely the field that I wanted to get into. So I started that path in 2010 and haven't looked back since.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Well, you've done so much since. When I started at BANA just over 3 years ago, I met you.
Yeah.
And Amani wasn't called Amani at the time. It was called Sapasi. Can you maybe tell us a bit about the history, the name change?
Yeah.
Tell us a bit more.
Yeah. So actually, Amani is the first Canadian hospital and community partnership that focuses on advancing care for Black youths.
Okay.
This program started like over 25 years ago at CAMH in Toronto. And you know, it really represents like a provincial of network with organizations in Ontario with the shared vision of providing programs and services to Black youths. It helps to empower them and just help to achieve their overall wellness goals. So, like you were saying, Amani was actually called SAPAC before, and it was Substance Abuse Program for African-Canadian and Caribbean Youths. It is such a long acronym. And I remember even doing presentations, and people would be like, wait, what? What is it? And so, with the coordination of Black youths and service providers, they were all involved in rebranding. And so they came up with Amani. So in Swahili, it's the word for peace, and in Arabic, it's the word for wishes. And so what Amani
Amazing.
really does, it's really like making sure that the Afrocentric part of the clients is also being adhered to and listened to. And Amani, like I said, it's provincial, and so like it's collaborative, like Toronto Northwest Justice Center, and then we do have like a Black Youth Advisory Panel who meet, and they have an active role in, like I said, the name branding, like just different resources that are putting out there, making sure that we're targeting the youth. And there's also like a program and a place for the families and the caregivers, because within our Afrocentric approach, we believe in healing in community and not just the person. So yeah, we've definitely had like a wind of changes through then, but in the last 4 years is when we expanded the other seven sites. So now we have programs in Etobicoke, Hamilton, North York, Ottawa, Toronto, Peel, Scarborough, and of course Windsor. So lots of growth, lots of changes, but definitely more catchment area.
Absolutely. I even think of the growth within our own community in the past few years that I've known about Imani and watched your team grow. Not only are you helping more youth, but also your team has grown. I feel like anyone I talk to knows about Imani now. So that is like, congratulations to you and your
Thank
team. That's
you.
really incredible.
Yeah, the work definitely was on the shoulders of the first group of workers that we've had to build relationships. And of course, with anything, it takes time, right? You have to go out and you have to meet community partners and establish yourself. But once you do that, you also have to provide the service that you said that you're going to provide and build that trust. So definitely the work, it was tough. And the first group of, I like to call them the OGs. Definitely laid the path for us and really starting and kicking things off with this program.
That's great. So you talked about in the development or the change from SAPAC to Amani, really making sure Black youth voices were heard. So can you just go into the details of who the Amani program is for? What does the program entail? Just some of those more nitty-gritty details.
Yeah, so Amani aims to be a space for Black youths ages 12 to 29, also families and caregivers to receive support for overall wellness. So this includes mental health and substance use counseling, recreational activities, community-based programs for youths and families and caregivers. So a lot of the times people might see us collaborating with like a lot of community partners. We've collaborated Banna Youth Wellness Hub, STAG. We also go out to the Bridge in Leamington. So it's really about like community meeting them where they're at, but also understanding that the work cannot be done by us alone. So we like to collaborate with a lot of other partners. But yeah, it's not just the individual, but again, it's their families and their caregivers really giving them all the support that they need. And noticing that caregiver support is also very important because we need to equip them so that they can work with their youths.
Yes, absolutely. And I do feel, just from an outsider's perspective, that holistic approach being so central to the work you all do is very evident. And you're right. I see, you're on the calendar at Youth Hub doing cooking with Amani. Can you tell us maybe a bit more
We
about
do.
like the different programs that you partner with?
Yeah, so at the Youth Wellness Hub, we would go there every other Monday to run programs. We used to do like bingo or movie nights and all of that. And they have an amazing program cooking every Monday as well. And one of our workers, actually Olu, he's our caseworker, which we'll talk about the team a little later. He had the initiative. He's like, what if we have a program where we do cooking food that is culturally appropriate? And so that's what we do. Like the last Tuesday of every month, we have Cooking with Amani. And in this program, the youths actually get to decide like what they want to cook. So I know in the past they've done jollof rice, they have done ackee and saltfish, they've done bakes, they've done food, like they've done so many
Yeah.
different things. And I think it's just exciting because the goal also is to work when it comes to like food insecurity, but teach them the different things that they can make with, you know, simple things around the house, but things that they are also used to within their culture. Some of the things that we've noticed too is that, like, when some of our families come and they have food insecurities, they might get food from the food bank and they're like, oh, I don't like cooking with like canned, you know, beans or those
Yeah.
things. Like, so it's like really teaching them how to utilize food that they're used to and just in a way to also help the youths learn how to prepare these meals as well. Because sometimes they do take on caregiving roles for their younger siblings.
Yeah.
So that was definitely one of the initiative. We are partnering too with STAG, where we've had Savannah. She works with the Black Health Program, but you know, she's
She's
also,
so lovely. I love running into her.
she is.
Yeah.
She does amazing work where she's done groups with like the girls there and talk about relationships and empowerment and just like, you know, self-confidence and self-esteem. So we've had that. And then we've also had our self-esteem group in-house at WeCHC for the Amani program and working. We've actually run it now, I think it was 3 times total.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, so we've tried to target different ages because our age range is so wide, 12 to 29. We had to kind of like break it down.
Yep.
But we're talking about sense of self, how that develop, how external messaging might influence, you know, how you feel about yourself, like cultural standards and beauty standards, how that might also affect your sense of self. So we've had those opportunities to have those groups. And again, we've also partnered with like The Bridge in Leamington, where we've had events with them. We used to go up there very often, actually. Had some clients who also resided at The Bridge. So using those community partners, of course, help us to not just target and meet more clients, but also learn more about what these different organizations are doing and how, again, we can meet the client and have more, like you said, a holistic approach, right? Because we
Yeah.
want to see them as an entire system and not just what is presented in front of us at that time.
Yeah. And I think another great thing you all do is just meeting them where they're at.
Yeah.
Like you are not afraid to go literally anywhere
Not
and
at all.
just, bring your services wherever you need to go. And that is probably, I'll say, life-changing for some of them who wouldn't have accessed your services either. And
Yeah.
then being in community with each other and
Yeah.
forming friendships. Yes, big advocate over here. Everything that you guys do. So can you tell us actually a bit about what your specific role is? Because have you been with the program since its inception at WeCHC?
No.
No.
So
Okay, so tell
I'm,
me about your
yeah.
role.
So I actually started 2 years, 6 months, and I guess 9 days, but no one's counting, right? I have started then once I moved from Toronto, and I've been with the program since I started. So my role is I work as a social worker and I provide psychotherapy to clients with mild to moderate mental health concerns. I am also a lead for both the Amani and the Black Health program, so supporting the other social workers, the case managers or care coordinators, and navigating services. We do, like I said, a lot of events, so we have a lot of discussions about events, like what will be appropriate, what we can do, what we can't do. So my role really is kind of like dual. So it's
Yeah.
like more of like the lead, but then I also have my own clients that I do have a psychotherapy.
Okay. You got a lot of hats.
A lot of hats.
And then you do the community outreach piece. I mean, your whole
Yes.
team does.
Yes,
That
we
also
do.
adds another layer of the hats you're all
Yeah.
wearing.
It's easier for sure when you have a team that, you know, are capable and definitely able to navigate that. So it makes my job a little bit easier for sure.
Okay, that's amazing. So, speaking of your team, who else is part of the team at
Yeah.
Amani?
So Amani, we have a social worker. Apart from myself, we have Faith Akinkwai. She's a social worker. We have Olu Ogunde. He is our caseworker. We have a peer support worker, Taban Jock. We actually met him through the Community Housing Corporation and
Amazing.
saw the need to have a young guy present, you know, and talk to younger youths. And he's also very big in the community. He like I said, worked with the Community Housing Corporation, works with after school programs. He coached basketball, like just,
Amazing.
and we actually have a new addition. So they haven't started seeing clients as yet, but we have a Francophone social worker.
Oh, amazing. I know
Yeah,
you've been looking
so
for that for a while,
for
so
a while.
that's
So
amazing.
yes, we have Murthro Augustine. He's our Francophone social worker. So he's still in his onboarding right now. And then once he's able to start seeing clients, then we will definitely have that promoting. And but yeah, we're definitely excited. Like I said, the team started off with just two social worker and a case manager, and now we have three social workers, support worker, case manager, and then we also have like the Black Health Program, which is part of that Black Collaborative Care. So they will have clients from like 7 to 11, and then prenatal and postnatal moms, and Imani's 12 to 12. So we're just kind of like filling in as many gaps as we can.
I was just gonna say, people won't be able to see my hands, but it's like the whole spectrum, prenatal till 29, so.
And I did forget to mention one of the other partners that we collaborate with, and we have a partnership, is actually the Catholic School District. So we're able to go into the schools and do psychotherapy with the clients there. So,
That's incredible. Again, just going to students at that point. So important. Wow, your team has grown. I didn't know all of this. That's amazing. Okay. What are, as a team lead and someone who's been with the program for a couple years now, what are the hopes and dreams for the program? What is the team envisioning? Or where are they envisioning it going?
We've actually talked about this, and we talk about having more supports and more social workers. And I think what would be nice and a hope is maybe having like a social worker stationed in the county. Now we commute out there, but it's like just having one stationary for being in the county, making sure that we capture all of those clients there. But eventually, ideally, and if I'm being honest, I would love to where we are all so culturally competent that we may not need a specific program. Instead, we're able to just like blend in and everyone knows how to deliver the services and all of that. So my hope though for the program is obviously to continue growing. But if I am like now 70 and I've retired,
70. Yeah.
you never know.
I know.
I would definitely like to see where like we don't have to have specialized programs. We are able to be culturally competent enough and have, representation within all levels that we do have clients who can have their needs met anywhere.
I love that. I will say you, this is a sneak peek. So this is actually part, I should have said this at the beginning. This is part one of two of my conversation with you because you recently started doing some training to see clients with eating disorders within the Imani program, which is incredible and obviously a gap that was noticeable. And so just a heads up for everyone who is listening. We are going to do a part two to this conversation, and it's going to be about cultural sensitivity and eating disorders. But I know that people see Imani as obviously the leaders and look to you to ensure that, like, as best practice, I guess is what I'm saying. And so I look forward to seeing how that transpires. And I think that's such a beautiful role.
Thank you so much. Yes,
Yeah.
looking forward to it for sure.
Okay. Okay. So if where is actually, before I ask this next question, where is your physical space?
So we are 1361 Olette Avenue. So we are at the teen health site of the Windsor Essex Community Health Center. Lower level, we don't like to call it the basement. We are at
Yeah.
the lower levels. And so like a lot of the times we might have our clients kind of wait because we do have a waiting area down there. It is fantastic. It's not the typical like clinical setting that you might see. We have a foosball table, we have Xbox consoles, we have
Cool.
TVs, we have a library with like all Black authors, we have all Black arts around the walls. So again, just giving that sense of like, okay, this is the space and having people comfortable. We do have, three clinical offices, and then like I said, those shared space and boardroom for like groups and all of that. So our physical space is 1361 Olette Avenue.
Lower level.
lower level.
I love it. Yeah, I'll never say basement again. If someone is listening though, who wants to access services, or maybe like a parent is listening and they want their child to access services, what would that look like? What is the process?
Yeah, so you can call us at 519-253-8481. That is our teen health site number. And you can just let them know that you're interested in connecting with the Amani program, and they can forward you to either myself or the case manager, Olu. You can also send us an email at Amani, AMANI, at WECHC.org. Different members of the team, we check those emails regularly. So when a person comes in for services, if they have been at the teen health site before, they already have a profile. Consultation will be put in, an intake will be done, and then they'll be triaged and sent to either myself or Faith. Sometimes we do have a waiting list, so it might be a little bit, but there is wellness calls during that time just to make sure that everything is okay. And we do invite people, you know, whether it's to Youth Wellness Hub for activities or to do groups, whether it's self-esteem, until they are triaged to a social worker and able to start services. So it's kind of like what the pathway looks like until you're done. And then, yeah, so, but we're excited to hear from you. Like I said, even if you have questions about the program, because I've had people just call just to get more questions, just to see if it fit, you can give us a call, or like I said, send us an email, or you can even visit us on WECHC's main website as well. We are more than happy to support and answer those questions.
Amazing. I'll put all that information in our show notes as well. The number, the websites, even I learned so much just from looking at the Amani, like the general homepage for Amani,
Yes,
looking through
yes.
all the programs. So I'll add that in the show notes. I'm also curious, you have typically youth services don't go until 29. Like you have quite a broad age range. What are, this is off script, but
It's
like
okay.
what are your like the main challenges you see Black youth facing right now in our community? Like as a team, what are you seeing?
So, want to kind of address why we've gotten all the way to 29.
Yeah.
So, research actually shows that Black youths, they look for services a lot later. So, by the time they might be diagnosed or even decide to, you know, engage in services, it's way older than
Yeah.
other people might want to join, get services. And so we've extended the back end to kind of make up for those shorter, you know, those spaces in between where they haven't seen services. I would say, like, as a team, a lot of things that we've seen across, you know, maybe like from 12 all the way to 29 is a lot of family discord. We have seen a lot of that, especially with families who have just like immigrated
Yeah.
or who, you know, they've had kids here. A lot of the kids, I like to say, they have to be bilingual culturally because they are navigating like the Canadian culture and like what, you know, they might see in the schools with their friends. But then when they go home, it's also like their home culture, how to navigate that. So sometimes we do see a lot of like family discord. We do have a lot of kiddos with like self-esteem issues and concerns, you know, anxiety, depression. But we also have like some referrals we get from like the court systems. Like there's
Okay.
been a higher number of like domestic violence and IPV related charges as well, right? And again, that cultural aspect of it really makes a difference. So I would say we see a wide spectrum of concerns and stuff that we deal with, but having it go all the way to 29, some of the challenges that we've also seen is once they get to that age, there isn't any culturally affirming free services available past 29.
Right.
And so a lot of the times it's we've gotten calls like, so what do we do now? And we're like, well, we could do private, you know, if they can afford it. But again, there isn't anything past that 29 age range. But we try to provide them with as much as possible, like tools just to help them navigate. But yeah,
Right.
we've definitely seen quite a bit of challenges, and even people feel uncomfortable to access services because, again, there's still like a level of mistrust within like the healthcare system, right? And
Absolutely.
even some of the parents that we've had is like, how do I know, you know, if you're involved that you won't call CAS on me, and you know, all of that. And of course, we have to talk about the safety involvement and, you know, things that has to be. That's reportable from our perspective as well. But we try to reassure them that we are taking that Afrocentric, you know, route where we are taking in your culture and like your values and all of those things into consideration before we do anything. And so sometimes it's getting the buy-in from the parents before we even have access to the kids, which is fine,
Yes,
right?
that makes sense.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I know we've even talked about, like, in other conversations when it comes to like food and cultures and how that can differ within the Black community too, and where families are from. Do you find maybe you see like you use a more family-based approach or community-based approach
Yeah, I
compared
think
to other programs?
we do for sure, because again, when we talk about like that Afrocentric approach, it is healings in community, but at the same time, we also go based on if the client gives consent and feel comfortable with their family or caregivers being involved. But we do talk to them about like the importance of having that, because this is one of the things that we can talk about too, is that like we can work with the clients in person and we're talking to them and helping them build that. But then when they get back home, it's almost like reverting to, everything before. So it's great for us to again work with the family so everyone is kind of on the same page. And I've had sessions with families that went really great and then some that went really not so great. But I think at the end of it, just being able to sometimes be that middleman, just bringing in, okay, this is exactly what your kid is trying to say, or this is what your mom or dad or auntie or grandma, because again, family is everyone. This is what they're trying to articulate. And again, when we talk about that bilingual and cultures, it's kind of like trying to get both sides to fully understand and how can we meet in the middle? Because at the end of the day, raising a child in a Canadian culture, you're not gonna prevent certain things from happening. And vice versa, when the child goes home, like this is your home life. This is what happens. Like whatever is going on at this person's house doesn't necessarily mean that's what's gonna go on in this house. And so a lot of the times it's having those conversations with both the family and the youth and trying to have like a common ground. Like I said, sometimes it goes really well and sometimes,
It happens.
it happens, but we definitely try our best to work through that for sure.
I also, I'm thinking back to what you said right before about having trust with maybe parents, and it this being a relatively new program in the community, I don't think I fully appreciated the trust with you or your team that would need to develop to like proceed with any type of care that you're providing. So yeah, I just wanted to, I'm it's more for me just my brain processing it, but that is no, that is so important.
It is, and it's such a big thing. Like even some of our referrals that we get right now, it's like, oh, my friend's, daughter went through your program, and
Oh,
again, it's
nice.
like that word of mouth. But if we're not able to provide the services that we say we're going to, then that distrust will continue, right? And again, sometimes, some people are calling and like, well, are you gonna tell me what my child said? And I'm like, well, no. There's still a level of confidentiality, of course. Like, we want the youth to feel comfortable talking, but you will be notified if there's any safety concerns or risks, right? And we do also tell them that. We talk to them about obviously confidentiality and limitations and all of that, but also talking to them about what do you think you need to see? We do involve the families. Like, what do you think you need to see to help like build a stronger relationship with your youth? And sometimes they will talk to us about it, and we talk to the youth. Do you want to include your family into this at some point whenever you feel ready, especially if there's that family discord? Sometimes they're like, yeah, not yet, maybe 2 sessions from now, or like still giving them, the autonomy to make that decision. And I like when they're like, okay, I'm ready to have mom or dad or whoever present. And so I'm like, oh, okay, good. Now, and I always tell is like, okay, now if at any time during this you're ready to be done, let's come up with a signal. And so, because then we can end it. And I've only had to use it a couple times, but again, it gives them the power and that autonomy and feel that, okay, I'm still running this train.
Yeah, and help building their self-confidence through that too, which is so important, like you said. I always ask guests this question. Is there a specific story or instance where working with a client in Amani has helped someone in particular that's really stood out? I know for confidentiality reasons, but do you have any general story to share?
I have one where I had a youth come in for support, and of course, there was a lot of ambivalence within the program for wanting to do this, and also felt that they didn't need it. Actually, they will be like, I don't think I need to be here. Like, I think I'm taking up a space for someone who really needs it. I remember it was just like we spend a couple sessions just building that trust within each other, building that rapport, just getting a better understanding of them. And through a lot of, like chatting, sometimes I'll be like, okay, do you just want to take a walk around the block? And this person was older, like older in 20s. And so we walked around for a bit and, then we played some foosball and just kind of chatted and again built that relationship. And then I think the part that stood out to me is when they were ready to open up, the conversations that we had, for me, some of them really stood out to where it's kind of like, oh wow, you were really listening, and you took it in. And one thing that I always tell people is like, my goal is to work myself out of a job. And when I say that, they're like, we don't want you to get fired. I'm like, no, that's not what I mean. It really is just like getting you to a place where you no longer need me. And there was a session where this client was like, Giselle, I think I'm ready. And for me, that's when it's kind of like, okay, you've met. They've met their goals, you feel comfortable, you guys have had those conversations about termination, getting them comfortable with it. But when they were like, I'm ready, you're like, okay, you take off those training wheels. And then sometimes we do a little follow-up. And this person did call back and be like, I still hear your voice sometimes when you
Oh, that's so
and
awesome.
they've showed up to other events. And I think just seeing the change within them, especially with young men, like sometimes it's harder to like crack those shells, but when you see that change within them, it just brings a smile to my face, because I'm just like, that's another black young man in the community who is going to be respectful and, just know how to navigate challenges and not live by the stigma of like you have to be tough and you can't show emotions and you shouldn't do that, but learning how to properly regulate. And yeah, it just makes me smile. So
It's making me smile. That is beautiful. That is beautiful. Well, you're obviously very good at what you do to be able to support all these clients. Beautiful. Okay, I love that you shared that story. If our listeners could only take away three simple facts about the Amani program or even mental health in Black youth, what would they be?
I would say we go from like an Afrocentric lens, so taking in the culture and all of that into consideration. It's very trauma informed, so it's very collaborative. We make sure safety is in place and all of that. And also we are just learning, we're curious, so we never come from the lens of, okay, this is what I say, this is what I do, but we're also very curious, having the youth explain certain things to us, learning from them as well. So I would say those are the three things. We practice Afrocentrism, it's very trauma informed, but then we're also very curious with our youth and curious about them. And again, it's all about empowering them and building that strength. And so we try our best to work very collaboratively with them.
Amazing. Perfect. Where can our listeners find more information about the work that you all do?
So again, you can find it on the WeCHC main website, www.wechc.org. And then we do have the program, so you can click on the Amani tab, and then it shows you all of the information about the Amani program, all the services that we provide, and all the work that we do.
Perfect. And again, I'll put that all in the show notes. Thank you so much, Giselle, for taking the time today to join me. I know you have a very busy schedule, and I see firsthand the incredible work you do and your team does in the community to support Black youth. And I'm so excited to share the work that you do with our listeners. And I hope it just makes at least one person feel more comfortable to reach out for support if they need it, or bring their kids in if that's something that they need. And for our listeners, if you're interested in learning more about just eating disorders in general in Windsor, Essex, please find us on our socials at Banna Windsor, our website, banna.ca, or read more in the Banna Be Yourself magazine. Thank you everyone for joining us, and we'll see you next time.